This week in our news, it may have been little noticed, but taxpayers scored a big victory on election night. We'll hear about that. Also hear about 10 more voter fraud arrests down in South Texas, as well as we'll learn that African studies is apparently a math class at UT. Our interview this week, we talked to Brandon Waltons, who brings us some big developments in the Texas House Speaker's race. And finally, have you ever heard of Federal Yellow? Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us about that in this week's commentary. Welcome back, fellow Texans. This is Texas Scorecard Radio coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can find me online on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. Find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. We've just added a new subscription service. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us now on Stitcher, in addition to iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. With that out of the way, let's get started with this week's news. Wanted to go up and talk to Aaron Anderson up in the DFW Metroplex. Aaron's got a really good story coming out of the election. A lot of the good news that we talk about with the most recent election is kind of hey, it's good news that it wasn't as bad as it could have been. That's the general tone. But Aaron has some real good news of Patriots, Texans, taxpayers out there fighting for greater property rights and winning some victories. Aaron, tell us a little bit about what happened on election night.
That's right, Tony. This is actually one of my favorite stories of election 2018. Citizens in six Texas counties got together and managed to accomplish what the Texas legislature did not, which is to protect local property owners from forced annexation. And what these groups did in six different counties, they organized a petition drive effort under a limited annexation reform law. They got local voters to sign petitions to get a measure on the November ballot. And voters in each of those six counties went to the polls and voted to protect their citizens from forced annexation. So that's a major win for property rights there.
Yeah, big victories, you know, what, like in the high 60s, 75%, those kind of margins in each of these counties, right?
Right, really big. And so the counties, I'll just name them off: Atascosa, Freestone, Johnson, Palo Pinto, Parker, and Wise. Voters turned out and voted in the 60s, as high as 81% for this property rights protection measure called Tier 2, a limited annexation reform law passed in the last legislative session, said that big counties could be protected from forced annexation, and they were designated Tier 2. All the smaller counties, everyone with fewer than 500,000 residents, that's almost every county.
Yeah, other than the biggest ones, right? Yeah, most of real Texas, right, outside of the big cities.
Right.
It's kind of stuck in this thing. We had a couple weeks ago Laura Hester and Bryson Boyd in from Parker and Wise counties talking about the campaigns they were running, talking to their neighbors, and they were trying to educate people. This is a no-brainer to vote for: greater property rights, right to vote on whether you get annexed into a city somewhere. But, you know, it was a confusing ballot proposition. So it's really cool to see the success.
That's right. And it really was an educational effort. I think a lot of citizens probably didn't realize that their property could be annexed without their permission. But that's exactly what's still happening in other counties. And so it'll remain to be seen if groups in other counties will take their cues from Laura and Bryson and these groups in these other counties, and also petition to get a vote for a say in their property rights. In fact, Ellis County has already done it. Their measure will be on the ballot in May, and I suspect others will too.
Yeah, so and the first lesson on this is, you know, it isn't just these six counties. Taxpayers in counties, any county smaller than 50,000 in population, 500,000. So anybody other than the very largest of counties, if you weren't on that little short list, you have the opportunity to do just like these folks did: go out and talk to your neighbors, collect the petition signatures, put this thing on a ballot, and protect your property rights. But it's important too. This is something the legislature could just solve next session.
That's right. They could, and they should, and hopefully they will. The nice thing is that these local citizens aren't waiting around for that. They're taking matters into their own hands and protecting their own property rights.
Yeah, it's a really cool story. Really appreciate you giving them good coverage because it's always great to see taxpayers out there taking advantage of something. And, you know, they don't sit back and wait for somebody to solve their problems. They go out, talk to their neighbors and solve it themselves, which is, you know, how self-governance is supposed to work.
Exactly. They did it, and so can others.
Next, let's turn to Miriam Cepeda with the Rio Grande Valley Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Another big story this week, the Attorney General making 10 arrests down in Hidalgo County for voter fraud. Tell us a little bit about what's going on down there.
Yes, Tony. There's currently an ongoing investigation in the City of Edinburgh November 2017 municipal election that ousted longtime Mayor Richard Garcia. And so last week, 10 arrests were made, making it a total of 15 people arrested on voter fraud charges beginning in May.
Yeah, and so, you know, to be clear, this is about, you know, an election a year ago. This isn't the most recent election. But, you know, you've got the Democrats out there saying, oh, there's no voter fraud. This is all a myth. There seems to be a lot of smoke and seemingly some fire here on voter fraud, particularly down in the Valley, but around the state. What are the allegations? What are they saying that these folks did?
Well, it's alleged that a coordinated effort by political campaign workers fraudulently changed the addresses of individuals who resided outside the City of Edinburgh in order to vote in this mayoral election last year. Earlier this year, a complaint was filed, and the AG's office found, in one particular instance, found that 11 people were registered to this small home on Fay Street here in Edinburgh. And it's alleged that 8 of those 11 people do not reside at that residence. Let me remind you that this is a very small home. So far, since the initial arrest occurred in May, 7 people have been arrested linked to this address, and 6 of which happened last week.
Wow. So basically, you've got campaigns saying, hey, let me grab up friends, neighbors, cousins, something like that, have them register in the city, and then vote in an election that they know they're not supposed to be voting in. What kind of penalties could these folks face?
Well, at the moment, there's 3 types of penalties that they could be facing. There's illegal voting charges. To make a false statement, let me remind you that that's a Class B misdemeanor. If you're voting illegally at a residence that you do not live in, that is a second-degree felony. And as well, if there's evidence to support that there isn't, in fact, an organized election fraud activity that was committed, that upgrades the prior offense to a first-degree felony,
yeah.
All of which these charges these individuals are facing at this moment.
Wow, so really could have a big prosecution there related to this conspiracy. Well, thank you for your reporting on it, Miriam. I appreciate you keeping an eye on things down there, and it's important that we have integrity in our elections.
Anytime, Tony.
For our final story, let's turn to Sarab Sharma, Capitol correspondent for Texas Scorecard. Sarab, you're also a student at the University of Texas. They're involved with the Young Conservatives of Texas. And you've got a story, a real eye-catching headline, African Studies is a math class at UT, somehow.
That's right, Tony. So this was precipitated by registration season. You know, right now students are registering for classes, and I was just looking through and trying to figure out, you know, what is it that the core requirements at UT require? And there's 2 cores at UT, actually. One passed by the state legislature, that's your traditional academic core, you know, have a math class, a science class, a communications class, et cetera,
this,
et cetera.
This is what the legislature focuses on. They say, look, we want everybody to learn kind of some kind of basics, so they got to learn history, they got to learn math, they got to learn that stuff, or so it seems.
Exactly. And the second part is a flag system. Now, we'll get back to the flag system, but I wanted to focus on something odd even in the academic core. So I was scrolling through it and I saw, okay, under this math requirement, there's an African and African diaspora studies class. And that really jumped out at me. And so I looked into it. Turns out there's a class called Numbering Race that teaches statistics using far-left social science as a subject of study. And this is the way that they make these far-left disciplines the most convenient classes for students to take at UT.
Yeah, it's really kind of startling. The legislature put these requirements on the public universities in the state, saying, look, we want to have a common core. Well, the common core is not the common core because you can go take African studies as your math class, but really more interesting is what that second part of it, the flags element, where the school is kind of getting around what the legislature intended and saying, oh, well, we have a core, but we got this other core over here, and this other core is all of this diversity mumbo jumbo.
Exactly. And, you know, the legislature often complains at the graduation rate of the University of Texas. The university says they need more money in order to fix this. But turns out they're really just adding new requirements for graduation. Not only have they recently increased the hours required to six more from 120 to 126 to graduate, but they have this new set of flags that include things like quantitative reasoning, independent inquiry, but also things like ethics and leadership, global cultures, and cultural diversity. And, you know, anyone who's familiar with the far left language on campus will see that those are dog whistles for kind of your far left politics classes.
Yeah, and you know, based on your takeaway of looking at this, they're making it so that, you know, the efficient student, the smart student who wants to get through the courses quickest, why wouldn't you take, you know, racial activism studies to check as many of these boxes as possible in a single class?
Exactly. So if you're, you know, a typical physics or engineering student looking to get through these requirements as fast as possible, it just so happens to be that the classes that fulfill the most flags and the most core requirements are classes that are activist disciplines. And I'll give you a perfect example. There's only one course at UT that fulfills a global cultures flag, a cultural diversity flag, as well as an ethics and leadership flag. And that is Introduction to Black Studies, taught by UT's diversity czar himself, Ken Gordon.
Not what the legislature intended. Well, thank you for keeping an eye on it. There is a student and as a correspondent. So appreciate your reporting on it. Something, you know, we need to pay more attention to what's going on with these universities. It's kind of crazy, and it certainly costs us a lot of money.
I agree, Tony. Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
For my guest on this week's program, I wanted to bring in Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard, and have a nice, thorough discussion over some really huge news this week with Dennis Bonin, state rep from Angleton, kind of establishing himself as the likely next speaker of the Texas House of Representatives.
Yeah, wow, how time changes things. In only a short 2-3 week campaign, State Rep Dennis Bonin has announced he has the signatures, he has the support, he's the presumptive next speaker of the Texas House.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit, you know, who is this guy, Dennis Bonin? You know, for listeners who out there who aren't nerds about the Capitol like you and I are, maybe they're not familiar with who this guy is. A little bit of a mixed bag, you know, kind of...
Sure.
Conservatives aren't necessarily sure what we're getting.
And he's been in the Texas House for a little over 20 years, actually. Actually entered the legislature in his early 20s as a young member and has been there ever since. This is a guy who has been aligned with leadership. Okay, he served as Speaker pro tem. Strauss is kind of number two in the last few sessions, last couple sessions.
But more of a functionary position than a power position.
Right.
You know, kind of there. It's interesting. He was a guy who was respected for his ability to actually wield the gavel, literally do the procedure of being speaker, and kind of rose to that position because of that talent. And it made him kind of a natural candidate for speaker, almost surprising that he stayed out of it so long. But then, of course, once he got in, it all kind of
someone who
came
certainly
together.
Seems yeah certainly seems comfortable wielding the gavel, sitting up there doing the, you know, the very business. With this, a lot of this does get lost when we talk about speaker candidates and what you kind of look for in there. But you know, at the forefront, you have to literally be able to control a house of 150 members, right? And be able to go through the legislative process. It's something that Bondin's had a lot of experience in, a lot of practice in.
Yeah. So. Let's talk a little bit about what he's done as a leader. He was chairman of the Ways and Means Committee and,
yes,
you know, was responsible for attempting to shepherd through some property tax legislation last session. And then ultimately this thing's dashed on the rocks at the end of the session. Out more positively, out with Governor Abbott, mm-hmm, kind of saying, hey, I'm on board with this for the coming session. You know, what can we maybe expect?
I mean, we saw Representative Bondin take a lot of the heat whenever the property tax bill was killed in the House and was obstructed. Kind of remains to be seen how much of that was from the liberal House leadership or liberal members on his committee, and how much of that was actually him. The important note here, and you touched on this, is that when Governor Abbott was out doing his press conference earlier this year, laying out exactly what he would like to see with property tax reform, State Representative Bondin was right there alongside him and Lieutenant Governor Patrick and other lawmakers, essentially endorsing that plan or saying, you know, we're standing with the governor.
Yeah, so we really want to cap property taxes. That's promising for the upcoming session. Let's talk a little bit about the background on this. You know, a lot of folks don't live and breathe this,
sure,
political thing, but this is an opportunity for a real sea change in the legislature. We've had 10 years of control by this coalition, mm-hmm, of, you know, Democrats first, plus some Republicans, and then kind of the rest of Republicans following along, controlling the lower chamber, obstructing conservative reforms. And there's this optimism, and I think continued optimism, that under a new speaker, you're going to have a Republican first chamber where the Republicans, mm-hmm, are the dominant bloc, and then you've got Democrats voting, you know, having their say as they are entitled to, voting on various matters.
Exactly. And we know that Speaker Strauss came in, you know, a decade ago with Democrats and a minority of Republicans electing him as Speaker.
Yeah, just 11. I mean, it was a 76-74 chamber, mm-hmm, back in those 2008 elections, a narrow majority. And so there's this group of 11, and he becomes the guy and is elected with 65 Democrats, mm-hmm, 11 Republicans, so overwhelmingly Democrat bloc,
exactly,
putting him into the seat.
And conservatives have seen the consequence of that ever since. And so with Strauss out, Strauss saying he's retiring, he's out, you had this open speaker's race, and this was the first opportunity, because not only was there an open spot for speaker, which itself brings a lot of a lot of opportunity for change, but you also had the Republicans in the House saying, you know what, we're not going to let what happened with Democrats electing Speaker, we're not going to let that happen this time. We're going to actually choose a Republican nominee for the speaker position amongst our ranks and our caucus, and that has completely changed the game, because now you actually see Republicans taking control of the House instead of playing second fiddle to the Democrats, who, by the way, are still a minority in the chamber.
Sure, yeah. So you've had the Democrats as this unified bloc, Republicans divided, and really, mm-hmm, that means the Democrats are the dominant bloc. Kind of interesting with this thing. So the Freedom Caucus, the most conservative members of the House, push for this rules change to have a caucus vote to pick a caucus nominee. You know, that has yet to happen. That's scheduled to happen on December 1st. At this point, it looks like it's going to be, hey, we're going to bring Dennis Bondin in. We're all going to say, right, sing kumbaya about how great Dennis, we expect Dennis will be. And he'll be the nominee. And then all the Republicans will go out and vote in a unified fashion for him. The question really, I think, in a lot of people's mind is, did that system work? Did it matter if he's being declared the winner well before that vote even takes place? Did that really even matter?
It absolutely worked. And so that December 1st date, that is still there. Now, the Republican caucus will still meet, and they will vote, and they will likely, anything could change, but it looks like they will likely nominate Dennis Bonin at that point. But the process absolutely worked. Look at Dennis Bonin in particular. His campaign for Speaker focused on Republicans first. And so in order to, you know, before the caucus position, you would have to probably go talk to Democrats, and you'd have to negotiate deals with them, cut deals with them, before then kind of building in Republicans into that and getting over that 76 number to get a majority in the Texas House. Instead, you had Dennis Bonin collecting the signatures from just about every Republican on the list of 109 members he released. Now, to take the position.
Yeah, it's so. Yeah, I kind of look at it. I think there are some similarities to the way we see presidential nominations go down. Mm-hmm. You know, your nominations technically take place at this national convention. It's this whole filtering up process of delegates and people running for conventions and everything else. But, you know, in the way it used to be, you'd go back in history, you'd have 15 ballots at a convention where they're going to pick one guy and then they're going to pick another guy and then they compromise on somebody else. But in the modern era, since at least the 60s and 70s, you've seen the primaries actually bind this process. And you go, okay, so does that convention thing matter? Well, yeah, it does. I mean, you watch how it plays out. It's the math of that process that's going to potentially play out impacts how people view the voting in the primaries. And I think a very similar thing seems to have happened here in this race with that caucus meeting kind of hanging over everybody going, okay, well, somebody who can unite 2/3 of the Republicans has a path. He doesn't have to get all the Republicans or, you know, all the Republicans minus five or what have you. He's got to get 2/3 of them. And then once he's there, then they're going to collapse in and decide, of course, I want to be on the team with the winner.
Right. And even the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, James Stickey, they put out a statement after this congratulating Bonin and saying that they were really glad to see this process play out. Like we said, this is the first time in recent memory that Republicans have had this opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. You had Tom Craddock elected in 2003, was the first Republican speaker since Reconstruction. Mm-hmm. Now you're essentially going to have the second Republican speaker. Of course, Joe Strauss, nominally a Republican, but again, based off who nominally his base of support was.
He voted for Beto O'Rourke. We're almost
or seemed to imply he split. He admitted he split his ticket this time and seemed to imply that he was a supporter of Beto, which is, you know, frankly not a surprise to those of us who follow the process. So anyway, big news here. You've got Dennis Bonin coming out. He says he's got 109 names. As you mentioned, was it 78 Republicans plus some Democrats coming together to say, hey, we're for this guy.
Yeah, it's about 78, 79 Republicans, about 30 Democrats added on to that. And these are not just members that are in the legislature now. You've actually got names as well from incoming members, so new Republicans and a few new Democrats as well. What's been interesting to see is that you've actually got a lot of Democrats, particularly the ones that aren't on the list, and particularly the Democrat sort of outside groups that are expressing that they are not happy with the Bonin speakership.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So a couple of the caucuses, Malk specifically, had a statement out, and it didn't seem to be happy-clappy Dennis Bonin. It was, oh, well, we hope this guy, you know, they always allege that every bit of legislation is racist. So they said, we hope this guy will stop being racist.
Right.
You know, it was kind of their press release, which to me was not a, hey, we're happy to be electing this guy. So I thought that was notable. A really interesting development, you've got State Rep Matt Krause out of Fort Worth out in a statement to his voters. He was explaining, hey, here's why I endorse this Bonin character you probably have never heard of. Here's why I've endorsed him. Here's some of the things I think we've accomplished. Really notable in that list, he says this Bonin has told him that he is going to cut Gordon Johnson, the puppet master over Strauss, the political consultant, the lobbyist who effectively controlled the speaker's office under Joe Strauss, cut him out of the loop, cut him out of the picture, which would be a huge development.
Be a huge development. I mean, we've seen for as long as Strauss has been in office that, you know, if you're a member and you want to build a pass, you have to go through Gordon Johnson. You have to go through consultants and the lobby. Bonin saying that not only does he not have a relationship with Gordon Johnson, but that he doesn't want anyone else to replace that. He wants the body to work within itself, yeah, not with outside consultants.
Now, of course, that's easier said than done.
Sure.
So we've got a guy here who's apparently saying a lot of the right things about reform and saying, hey, we don't want to just replace one puppet master for another puppet master, or keep the same Gordon Johnson puppet master around. Before we finish here, what can listeners do to try and ensure that we get a good result out of this?
Well, like you said, talk is cheap, and we'll actually get the opportunity to see what a speaker, Dennis Bonin, does in the next session. But I think folks right now can talk to their lawmaker. Chances are 109 names that their legislator has signed on to support Bonin. And talk to them and say, you know, what are you expecting to happen, and how are you going to fight for me and for the pro-taxpayer, you know, reformed conservative agenda, whatever you want? How are you going to fight to make sure that stuff comes up and that that stuff gets a vote? I think talking to your legislator is very important.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Brandon. I think that it's an opportunity now to extract those promises from Bonin from legislators to say, hey, look, we need accountability moving forward, that we are going to have a new day in the legislature and a new day where people have a voice instead of the lobbyists. So
exactly.
Appreciate your report on it. This is definitely not the end of the story, and we'll definitely be covering it moving forward into December.
Thank you.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program sponsored by Empower Texans? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can compete with your friends and fellow activists across the state by watching a live leaderboard, as well as seeing what others are doing across the great state of Texas. You can even earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearers logo on it, or a multitude of other prizes. For example, we just gave away an awesome custom Glock handgun. With the Texas Torchbearers program, it's even easier to make a difference. Everyone should sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
With the elections behind us, and as we look forward to the legislative session, a lot of the elected officials are going to be talking about how they want to cut waste. Michael Quinn Sullivan has a few thoughts on that in this week's commentary.
Sometimes saving money really is as simple as not spending it. With today's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. It's a fact that the wealthiest people, those self-made millionaires who define the American economy, well, they got that way by spending less than they made. One successful entrepreneur told me he refuses to buy overpriced coffee at a chain when he can get it for pennies at the office. He's never bought a new car and uses credit cards only for emergencies. His business has made a lot of money, but being frugal with his own money has made him rich. If only most bureaucrats treated our money the way wealthy businessmen treat their own, we'd be doing a lot better. But sometimes we do find those public servants who take a proper view in conserving our cash. For example, when Phil Wilson took over as the head of the Texas Department of Transportation a few years back, he asked employees where they could save money. It turns out that since the 1940s, whenever TxDOT got a brand new yellow piece of highway equipment, they would immediately repaint it to another special shade of yellow called federal yellow. Now, federal law doesn't require them to do this, and state law doesn't require it either. It's the way things were always done, and done for a long time. No one thought that it made sense or were defending it. It's just that no one wanted to speak up to point out how wasteful the practice was. Remember, we're talking about specialized equipment that showed up already painted yellow from the factory, but TxDOT would repaint it to another type of yellow. The cost for giving new yellow equipment an unnecessary paint job? Close to $2 million a year. So Phil Wilson made an easy call. Stop it. He put the money to better use, actually building roads. Now, look, it won't always be as easy of a call as not painting yellow equipment another shade of yellow. But to cut wasteful spending, we need more people willing to speak up and more public officials willing to take action. Good government starts with good stewardship. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with today's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's program. If you want to ensure you never miss an episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, you can subscribe, as I mentioned at the top of the program. We're now on Stitcher, one of the services, but we're also on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. So great opportunity to subscribe. If you already subscribe, go on there and give us a 5-star review. Really helpful in promoting the program to new listeners who ought to hear what we have to share. So thanks for listening, and come back next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.